Welcome to the Hyper Voice, episode 62. This is a show all about Pokemon's video game championship series.
But not this time. This time it's all about Star Wars Rebels.
We're going to talk about Star Wars for this one. Okay. Well, first off, I'm your host, Steven Morioka, and I am here today with Alex Underhill.
You can call me Luke.
And John Hu.
Yeah, I'm Vader.
Wait. Oh, yeah, that's still okay. I thought for a second that you were saying you... I thought I said I was Anakin for a second, and I was like, no, wait, that's not...
No. I am your father.
You don't want to be Anakin. Okay, Alex is Luke. John is Vader. I will be C-3PO. How's that?
Okay.
I just want to be a random character.
He's good, though.
Anyway... We're going to move and talk about Pokemon right now. Sorry for the little Star Wars tangent here, but we're going to start with some feedback for our show. And then we're going to talk about some a new Pokemon for the Sword and Shield games. And then we're going to move into some other stuff. But we're just going to start with some feedback. This is from our email, vgchypervoice@gmail.com, from Rachel B. And this says, I'm a new listener. Found your podcast via Soundproof, and I've listened to every Season 2 episode. Love this stuff! Can't wait to see what Sword and Shield is going to do to the competitive scene and how you two cover it. So, Rachel, thank you so much for the feedback. We really appreciate that. And definitely another shout-out and plug for the Soundproof show.
Yeah, I was going to say, this sounds a little bit backwards. You're supposed to come to us first and then them. Come on.
It's all right. We're all one big family.
They all came back to us in the end. It's all good.
Yes, true.
Yeah, we're all just trying to make content and have some fun here. But yeah, thanks so much for the feedback. Really appreciate that. And, you know, everyone else can also send stuff there as well and on all the other social media platforms. But let's get into the meat of things here. And
whoa.
Let's talk about...
I think I know what you're going for there.
Sort of a brand new Pokemon. Announced last week, which is another Galarian form, an evolution that was, you know, part of a leak earlier, a few months ago. And
Steven, you are killing me.
I know, I'm just trying to keep us really sharp for this Pokemon's topic here, but...
Oh, God.
And I am trying to shield the listener's ears.
Anyway, we got a new Galarian evolution for Farfetch'd, known as Sirfetch'd. And I kind of want to just get everybody's thoughts and impressions on Sirfetch'd here. You know, what we all think about it with its typing ability, how it looks, and how it's also going to be an exclusive Pokemon for Sword. What do you think?
Well, I guess I'll start. This is a Pokemon that I really like, mostly because I liked Farfetch'd. Kale, yeah. Kind of stuff. So yeah, getting his just desserts, I guess. I'll keep making these food puns as long as I can. He gains a bunch of weight and changes like his entire typing, which I
what
think
is
really
up
interesting.
With the weight, what is up?
I don't
with
know,
the weight?
Dude. I mean, maybe he's just putting on the weight because of that goose game coming out. You know?
Yeah,
got to show up that goose cousin.
Yeah, I just thought that was so great during the week, how everybody was talking about Sirfetch'd as well as Goose Game. The Goose Game just looks so cute and charming and fun.
Sirfetch'd is even the same color as the goose.
Yeah, like, it's meant to be.
It's meant to be. I do think that fighting type has not been super great in recent years because of that fairy type.
Especially plain fighting.
Yeah, assuming they kind of balance out the fairy type this time around, so like no Tapus, no Xerneas, that kind of stuff. We might see him be a little more useful, but it's not looking super great in my opinion. It's just another fighting type, to be honest.
With a really bad ability. Ooh, Steadfast
Steadfast is bad, 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 bad.
Like,
it'll have a better hidden ability.
When I think of Steadfast...
Because Farfetch'd hidden ability, Defiant. So, I mean,
yes.
If this mon gets Defiant, that becomes pretty good, right?
Yeah, when I think of Steadfast, I just think of, like... how Steadfast and Inner Focus are somewhat similar, you know, both, you know, related to flinching, but it's just so much better because you're very rarely being, like, the most common way to be flinched is, for us VGC players, a fake out, and Inner Focus, you know, allowing your Pokemon to be immune to fake out is really cool. However, if your Pokemon has Steadfast, most people are going to know about this, and they will either avoid faking out your Farfetch'd, or just do it anyway, and then the Farfetch'd is just going to go down once it does flinch, because it's, like, a speed boost isn't going to make it any bulkier. It's like just, it comes into effect the next turn. You have to take damage for this to happen. It's just not ideal.
I wonder if like Sirfetch'd weight gain is going to like give us a hint, like maybe it will actually be bulky.
It does have like a shield, you know, like it's yeah, prepared for battle.
Yeah, and it actually kind of makes sense why they changed Sirfetch to a fighting type and why it's white, right? Not because of the Untitled Goose Game, but because, you know, it's supposed to like resemble being of a hero type. You know, right? The Pokédex entry where they describe Sirfetch on the website as being very noble in battle and they fight very honorably. So it's like a white knight, right?
Yeah.
And remember in Japanese, the fighting type is like the hero type. So Sirfetch is playing the hero in this story.
Right. That's a fair point. I do think his design is great, to be honest. Like, if you just look at it,
yeah,
it just kind of screams that knightly aura. And the whole, like, leak kind of spinning down into having a hilt and having a little bush roll at the end of it is just really, like, good to see that kind of detail. It's kind of like the designing has gone back to kind of, like, the old-time designs where it's just, like, they kind of just take an idea and run with it rather than trying to make it appeal to a wider array of audiences.
I was actually super not into disbelief, but when all that image floating around the internet when that was going about, that like low res photo or whatever of I thought it was like a leak through, you know, typically what we're used to seeing 4chan or whatever, like some sketchy source that had released this and said, oh, here's something that we're going to be seeing in the new game, or they had pulled it from some trailer footage and somebody was like, oh, I found this in a really weird spot. So I never really looked much into it. I didn't realize this was like a Pokemon official like release like leak.
Yeah, like they're saying like it was due to Rotom or something, and you know, even the color scheme from that like pixelated image was, you know, similar to Sirfetch colors. So, it was neat how they had, like, a whole two-day thing with this whole process, trying to unveil Sirfetch to us in this way.
It's funny, because pretty much everybody got it right away. Like, everybody was like, immediately, well, this is what it is.
I did have a couple friends think that, well, it's just, like, Cubone with a giant bone. And I was like, well,
why would they do it a third time?
The side, but, I mean, come on.
Would they do it's a Cubone Sirfetch, a third right? time?
Marmok already got an alternate form, so, you know, let someone else have the limelight, right?
Yeah, you got to spread the love around for the Kanto region. Now, one other quick thing I want to talk about for Sirfetch is it's getting a signature move called Meteor Assault, but I think it has one of those drawbacks like Hyper Beam or Blast Burn, Hydro Cannon. So at least that's what the description tells me, is that it needs to spend a turn recharging. So
yeah.
I don't see that being that great.
The only hope for this move. There's only one.
It really just depends on how high of an attack stat Sirfetch will have, I think. Because there are some applications for using these one-hit KO moves, especially
Dynamax.
You
can use it under Dynamax.
Yeah.
It'll
especially if you have,
typing.
Kind of a middling, I say, attack stat, although I don't really know what middling will be like for Sword and Shield. Like, if we take a look at a Pokemon like Megalopony, who had, like, 135, by today's standards, that's kind of like a middling attack stat because we're playing Ultra Series. So Giga Impact was like a real consideration just to patch up your offense. Not sure if Sirfetch can really match that in the new meta, but let's say his attack is something around like 100-ish. Then I would say maybe with a choice band, I'd say it's probably an okay move.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're a fan of crazy Boit strats, you can always do Side Roar. That's something you can do.
So that's an interesting point that you mentioned, Dynamaxing. That inspired some thoughts in my head. First off, yeah, it's going to be really good with Dynamax just because you boost up your whatever max move for fighting types, and that's going to do a lot of damage and be cool and strong.
That's
but
true.
Also, that made me think, with a move like Meteor Assault, I could definitely see this getting a Gigantamax form, with Meteor Assault being the base move for it or whatever. I don't know if that's how it works, but I feel like...
Yeah, we don't really know what the trigger is for Gigantamaxing.
I know, I'm going to keep calling it Gigantamax, even though it's probably Gigantamax.
Oh, it's totally Gigantamax, because it's, like, gigantic.
Or, like, Giga, like, I think Giga also means big.
Giga, Gigantamax.
Giga, yeah, it applies.
Okay, yeah.
Giga, prefix meaning, means...
Okay. We'll say they're both fair until like there's something actually said by Nintendo or Pokemon.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just like a prefix meaning
except,
numbers.
I don't know if we can trust Pokemon after the whole Arceus debacle.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, right. Yep.
Now, I had one last thing to touch on with this guy, which was that it is a evolution. Like, or, at least we think it has to be, because it's not the same name.
That survive. It literally says it in the description, Alex.
Oh, you're right.
It's confirmed to be an evolution of a Farfetch, or a Galarian evolution, to be more specific.
Yeah, so like, Pikachu, Pokemon, Raichu kind of deal.
But we're going to have to wait to see, you know, it probably will be that it evolves from regular Farfetch'd.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we will see a Galar Farfetch'd, but yeah, this is just really interesting to see because it is getting a evolution and a Galar form, which is unprecedented by Alolan standards, but I guess kind of not new considering we have Obstagoon or whatever, but still just really cool and exciting to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the last thing you can refresh is that it's a sword exclusive Pokemon.
So oh, yes.
Shield players will have to trade for this mod. And that also begs the question, what kind of shield exclusive counterparts would Sirfetch have? Would they be like Galarian evolutions from old Pokemon like this one? Or would they just be like maybe Escavalier because they happen to be in that duel that they talk about in the description?
Oh yeah, just like mentioned straight up on the page. I mean, like, hopefully it's for another Pokemon that isn't super relevant, because like Escavalier, as our Ray Rizzo would say. Escavalier, you know, is already decent in terms of its stats. Like, it doesn't need help.
No.
I was thinking, I don't know, like, let's everyone throw out a quick guess on what we think the shield exclusive could be, because I'm thinking, like, my first thought when I saw this was, like, maybe Fortress. Like, it's way out there, but I'm just thinking, like, Galarian Fortress might get an evolution or something for the shield side.
Well, that's the thing, is Farfetch'd exactly representing sword, you know? Like, it has a lance, but it also has a shield, so I don't think we have to restrict it to being a defensive shield Pokemon. I think it could be almost anything.
I still went for Fortress, but go ahead.
Yeah, I've been seeing, like, you know, rumors circulating in the board, like, the forum posts. It's like, maybe Chatot would be, like, the alternative. Like, a weird, I guess, Galarian version of Chatot that evolves into a better version of Chatot, essentially.
Yeah, I heard
really
the same.
I'm not really sure if I buy into that one. I think it's probably less predictable than we think because of what Alex said about it doesn't necessarily have to be a shield-themed Pokemon on defense. And that, you know, really, maybe Pokemon really is just trying to balance out some of the Pokemon that, you know, didn't get enough balancing in the past. So Pokemon that have been done wrong, I guess.
Yeah, Pokemon that need a lot of help.
Yeah, so Farfetch is getting a lot of help here. Remains to be seen whether he actually got help, but
maybe
it'll be someone like, I don't know, Zatu.
I'm thinking it's going to be a standalone Pokemon is my thought, and so that's why my pick would be like Delibird or Dunsparce.
Well, I like Delibird. That's good.
Yeah,
I'm not really sure how much better you can make an ice flying type. You'd have to change the type completely, I guess.
Hey, I mean, we can change the type, though. That's exactly the thing. That's what this
also,
is for.
Also, Delibird doesn't really fly either, so I guess you could just lose the flying type and become someone else.
I'm really bummed that he lost the flying type Farfetch'd. I mean, he's not gonna, or Sirfetch'd, he's not gonna fly with those weapons
He's holding stuff with those wings of his. Wait a minute, does that mean he's added to the list of burr Pokemon with feather-like, or finger-like feathers, I guess?
Is that a list that exists?
Yeah, Lugia is one of them.
Oh, that's true.
He's got some finger-like feathers if you see him.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I have no idea what the shield exclusive could really be. Just some thoughts from all of us here. Let's move on from Sirfetch. I think we pretty much nailed everything we needed to talk about it.
Could you imagine shaking his hand?
I'd love to do that.
His feathery bird hand.
I might smell like green onion afterward, though.
That's fine.
That's okay. As long as we can cook, right? So, anyway, this past weekend, you know, the Nintendo Switch Lite was released, and, you know, we talked about this on the show before, but did anyone happen to pick one up?
I didn't even realize.
It's going to be a no for me.
Okay, so it's no's from all three of us across the board. So none of us seemed the appeal or saw the appeal in getting one for it. Now, this kind of, you know, begs the question, are these also going to be allowed to be able to play for VGC 2020? And if so, how are they going to be applied for when you need to go on stream with a Nintendo Switch Lite?
Yeah, so we're going to have these, like, dock setups. There's, like, a lot of questions, you know, up in the air, how tournament's going to be run with these Switches. But one thing that is a positive going forward was that streaming will be better. You know, we can't stream digital carts currently because unless they are facing against a physical cart. But if you have two digital carts in the current state of the game, you're just not able to stream, which is a real bummer. But then going forward, I was like, okay, this is great. You know, Switch docks are really easy to set up and just, you know, hook up to some kind of TV, some kind of monitor, and then you can just record that screen. And that's really simple. I think that streaming will be a lot easier for that sense. But you can't dock a Switch Lite. Ugh, it feels like we had it solved, and then Nintendo came out with this silly little extra system.
Yeah, it's kind of like the 2DS thing again, like a little bit.
Yes.
I remember like people play using the 2DS all the time, but it doesn't have a flippable screen, like no clamshell. So it really becomes kind of an issue when you're trying to play your opponent and you don't want them to like peek at your screen. It's kind of, I feel like it's more similar to that aspect than it is for the streaming aspect. Cause like, sure, you won't be able to use the Switch Lite in a docked scenario, but I think, at least this is what I've talked about with like some TOs, is that they think there will be a spectator mode, which kind of eliminates the need to even have a system being docked.
I'm holding out for that.
Yeah, which is hopefully what happens, so the Switch Lite can be used kind of at its full potential. But really, since you can't unattach the Joy-Cons, I think that's really, like, the issue. Because when you want to select a move, you'll have to actually pick up the Switch Lite, pick your moves, put it back down, so that the IR can communicate. If it's through IR, which I assume it is, since the Switch does have those ports.
It hardly has IR. What are you talking about, Steve? Steve and John. No. Like, the IR are on the end of the Joy-Cons.
Oh. Okay.
Well, I mean, like,
yeah, isn't that right?
It could, I guess. Like, huh. I didn't think about it that way. But they're on the bottom side, John.
Oh, like so the side that's attaching to the Switch.
Like, what I mean is, even if you're not docking it, and like, you know, me and you are playing with both of our Switches held in hand, and we wanted to connect via IR, we would have to face our screens towards the opposite person because it's on the bottom side of the right Joy-Con. So then I would be watching your Switch and you would be watching mine for the upcoming turn.
What a kind of a whole mess. So I wonder if they're going to move away from IR in that case.
And also,
I'm not really sure how they'll handle it.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be this because also they would be lined up really like asymmetrically, not like asymmetrically because, you know, it would be the left one lined up with the left one. So they'd just be super misaligned, and this sounds hilarious.
Kind
though.
Of a giant mess. Yeah, I didn't consider that. I guess I just thought, well, they definitely have IR ports. I didn't
sadly
realize
nothing.
They were in that position. And it goes to show how much
it's all right, John. Before we edited the show notes, Steven had a very different conception about the Switch as well. I'm gonna have to call him out.
Oh, I'm gonna bring this up now.
Okay. I almost let him get by without it, but Steven was about to ask, like, what are we gonna do about headphones with the Switch? You can't put it down without with headphones plugged in.
Yeah, I was worried because I forgot which side the headphone like jack plug is. So they're, you know, the where you insert it. So I forgot it was on the top.
Yeah, headphones are like should be a no problem because now you can actually see it plugged into the top of the device.
Now, Steven, you do have a valuable concern though. If we aren't playing with our systems docked, which I imagine we're not because that's going to require a lot of setup, a lot of resources, we'll probably be playing with our Switches sitting on the table. If your system gets low during the middle of a match, I'm not sure how we're going to handle that because you can't rest your Switch using the little kickstand while it is while it's
power
charged.
Bank?
Yeah, while it's charged, or while it's charging. Because
yeah,
it plugs
yeah.
Into
so
the
you
bottom.
Have to like, you have to like lift it off the table so you that cable can fit because that port is on the bottom of the system.
Yes, it is.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what they're gonna do with that. So,
well, also one last thing about that Switch Lite, does it have a kickstand? It does not, right?
It does not, because it does not have a kickstand because it doesn't play in. It's specifically designed to be handheld mode only, and tabletop mode would not, you know, not technically be considered that because it's not being a handheld. It'd be sitting on the table. So, no, it doesn't.
So then the people that do opt to bring a Switch Lite to tournaments will have to hold it for the entire round.
Yeah, that's why I was saying it was more similar to like the 2DS SIP debacle rather than the stream issues. But I mean, it has both those issues technically. So
lovely, lovely.
Combine all our issues into one, and then we can just solve the one big issue, right?
Just ban this thing.
It'd be nice if they just like programmed Tom into the Sword and Shield games, and then like they just have a code that you scan for each tournament, and then be like, okay, this is you're gonna scan this, you're gonna get your next pairing, you go play, and then you wait till the next round, and then here's your next pairing.
I want a spectator mode, and I want tournament software. This is exactly
what based on the reveal of the ladder system and worlds. I think that's where they released it anyway. I kind of have high hopes for their competitive like handling moving forward. It seems like Game Freak is starting to like get on the actual program with organizing tournaments and like competitive play.
Yes,
their ladder system is more reminiscent of like Splatoon's, which I hear is a really nice like system for players that I know. And that just seems to speak to me that, well, maybe they're talking with like the Splatoon devs about how to organize their ladder system. And that's good news for me, since really the issue with BattleSpot now is that, well, you're queued up against like the whole whoever's queued up, and then they try to match you up with the same rating. But sometimes it's just not possible. So they rate you up with a lower rated player, someone you shouldn't actually be playing.
Right.
Okay. But this kind of tiered system kind of takes that away. So you won't be able to fight someone who's in a different tier.
Okay. Yeah,
so hopefully all these issues are fixed for once we do switch to Sword and Shield. There's still a lot of questions that we need answered so we can talk about them. But mostly, I'm just very curious, and I'm sure many people are as well. So hopefully people can begin their journey to Worlds in London. And speaking of Worlds in London, we want to talk about Travel Awards next. And specifically how the system's been for the last few years especially with the travel stipends and awards to the internationals, but we're specifically talking about the ones to World. So, you know, you get the day one buy and your travel award to the World Championships, which have all been in North America the last 3 years. We're finally moving to Europe for this next one. And there was a lot of talk about this after the World Championships about should the distribution of the travel awards be different because World is now in Europe. Because as it stands right now, it is 8 for North America, Latin America, and Asia Pacific, each region, so 8-8-8. And Europe is still going to get 16 in terms of like travel award and stuff. So Worlds is in Europe now, so it's going to be closer for all of them. But the rest of the regions have remained the same. So, you know, what are we thinking about this? And do we think any of these numbers should flip-flop or should anything change here?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, I might have been the one that raised this, I think, at World, Steven. I feel like we talked about this when we were sitting there after this got announced. And, yeah, it's just, you know, it boils down to why was it this way originally? Did we ever get an explicit reason as to why Europe gets 16 versus the rest of the world's 8? Because I don't know if we have.
I mean, like, is it based on population? Because that doesn't sound accurate either. Because I'm sure, like, there are a lot of players who come from more populated areas in Asia Pacific, as well as Australia. You know.
So my two thoughts were, you know, Europe gets 16 because either A, they have a comparable player base to North America where it's hosted. Because regardless of like population sizes, I think Europe and North America put up the biggest attendance numbers, and those are the two scenes that are the largest and at least receive the most support. It seems, you know, they have the most events.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I guess special events in Latin America get kind of crazy, but that's a different topic. But anyway, so my thought was that because Europe is the, you know, next largest region, but they never are the host for Worlds. That's why they get 16. Then my backup reason for it was that Europe is just so filled with so many different countries all packed densely together. And, you know, maybe they just wanted to have a large representation of different countries at Worlds. And so this opens up that opportunity for more countries to make it into Worlds to qualify so they can have more representation. But, yeah, it's just interesting because things are flipped now. And I don't know if North America necessarily deserves 16, but it's just, it raises the question, why was Europe 16? And yeah, is this something that needs to change?
I think it's always hard to kind of talk about this topic when you're part of the party that feels like slighted. In this case, where the North
America absolutely. Here.
So when you talk about, well, shouldn't we get 16 because it's going to be in Europe now? It kind of seems a little like selfish to say that, but also at the same time, for most of the Americans like player base who aren't like snowball chasers, this trip is like way more expensive than any trip I've seen like in the past couple of Worlds. Like going to San Francisco is one thing. Going to London, which is an entirely different country, you need a passport. You probably need to, you know, book your flights way ahead of time. Like that kind of stuff kind of seems more like a reason to have increased travel awards, since you can, you know, kind of spread the travel awards in a better fashion. Because for most of the EU people, I think it's fairly safe to assume it's not as expensive to travel around European countries as it is to just like travel between America and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So for the 16 players who would get travel awards from the European region, they might not even like need all of that stipend, so they might as well just collect it at the venue when they play, and then it kind of like withholds the money. I know it's like kind of a sensitive topic since we've kind of had some drama about it here and there. That's not what we're going to talk about, obviously, but that's just some of the concerns, like thoughts I had about in my head for thinking about whether we should increase North American stipends to 16 or like take away from Europeans, which I'm still not really sure what this, I guess, solution is. I don't think there is really a right solution at this point.
It's gonna stay the way it is. Nothing's gonna change. And if anything, they won't take away what they've already promised. It would just bump NA to 16 at this point. If they wanted
and
to like change.
And I mean, like if they bumped up other numbers from other regions too, that'd be okay. The other issue is like if you do that for travel awards, like I imagine the buys are also gonna happen. So. Yeah, and I don't think I see them splitting, you know, top 8 will get travel awards and the buys, and then like 9 through 16 will only get to the travel awards. So that's not going to happen.
Then you got a fat day too. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be too much. That's not something that's going to change. And I agree that nothing is going to change. I'm actually fine with the numbers the way they are. Like it's not a big pressing matter to me personally. But I just looked at the number of countries in all of the rating zones in general, and Asia's got 48, Europe has 44, and South America has 12.
I was just going to say, like, Steven's going to show me up, isn't he? He's going to be like, you nerd, you know nothing.
Check your facts, bro.
Oh, no. But,
actually, I didn't know these things. I just looked them up while...
But that's why I mentioned player base, you know, and like the tournament attendance.
Yeah, but like it's not like every single country is playing intensely, so those numbers probably dwindle down to much smaller than we're actually thinking on the numbers we just presented. But yeah, so these travel awards to Worlds are going to stay the same. I know there can be arguments for them. I'm fine the way they are. You know, 8 for North America, 8 for Latin America, 8 for the Asia-Pacific rating zone, and 16 for the Europe rating zone.
Now, hey guys, I am a pretty experienced VGC player, but I'm going to ask a very newbie question, and I'm almost embarrassed to ask this on the podcast, but I'm sure other people wonder the same. Where does Mexico lie?
Mexico used to be part of the North American region. I think it technically is now part of the Latin American region. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's the...
So see, you have the same kind of confusion.
So This is for Pokemon, right?
Yes, yes. Because I know that...
So John is mentioning Mexico as being part of the Latin America for Pokemon. I think geographically...
That's why
Mexico
I say
is
it.
Technically North America.
Yes. That's... No, because I do know.
I do remember back in the day, though, that it was just part of North America. Like... For Pokemon purposes, because Latin America didn't really have a whole region like to organize events in.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But now that there is like kind of that region with TOs and stuff popping up down there, I think Mexico is considered part of that, like Latin America.
Yeah, like
it definitely is. Yeah,
it's pretty well established now. Like they have a very well established scene, so. One of the reasons, like, I could definitely see why Mexico would not be included with the North American rating zone is just because, like, there's, when you compare, like, the Pokemon there, like, just the number of players, I feel like it's, North America's just outweighs that, the number too greatly, where this just, like, they don't see it as being fair.
Oh, so they just, like, put them in the Latin American to boost their numbers, I guess?
Yeah, I think that's what Steven's saying. At least that's what
I guess
got.
So. Yeah, that's, yeah.
I guess the way that my, I'm kind of now realizing and figuring it out in my head is that the North American regional schedule, when you look at that, it lists all of the events that obviously take part in North America. It also listed in past years, and I think this year too, the ones that happen in Canada, you know, so that's considered the North American region. I know that there have been Mexican events like regionals and stuff like that, but I've never seen them listed in the North America event schedule. So I think that kind of just debunks my whole like, could they be North America? But no, that I think they are Latin America. But good to see that I wasn't the only one with this bit of confusion, since it's just like the main confusing thing for me was that I do know Mexico is part of North America geographically. However, Pokemon kind of did away with that. They, like, almost like, it's like in, what is it called in politics? Gerrymandering?
I think that's it.
Where you draw
where
the,
you draw
like,
the borders.
The borders so that it can, like, help you win a vote. In this case, Pokemon's doing it so that all of their regions are more equal. Latin America is a bit more of a sizable region when compared to the others.
That just reminds me of that one example they always use to explain gerrymandering, as Google Maps displays different borders depending on what country you're in. Like, if you're in a country that's having territorial disputes with another, it'll show the borderline in favor of your region, essentially.
Oh, really? Yeah. I hadn't heard that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. I think it's like something that came up in my classes while I was in undergrad.
Uh-huh. It's almost like TPCI is, you know, being biased, you know, trying to guarantee that those slots for the awards and the buys go to a U.S. or Canadian player, which, you know, this is not a knock against the skill level of any player in Mexico, but it's just saying, like, you probably have a fairer shot with just the Latin America rating zone, just because of the disparity of events.
Yeah. Yeah, because it seems to, just in general also, it just seems to be easier to get to all of the events in America and Canada versus, you know, going down to Mexico in general.
Yeah, very true. And I think, you know, we've covered the Travel Awards topic a little bit here, or enough here. And, you know, John had just mentioned about being in classes in undergrad. But now, John, you're a teacher. Teaching students, and you know, they're aware of some of your Pokemon endeavors and your accomplishments, so we kind of want to just bring up this topic and just ask you a few questions about this. And we're also going to talk about, you know, how we've been recognized for playing VGC outside of the game, and like, we're all pretty, you know, smaller name players, but
along those lines,
sort of. So John, just tell us about your experiences now in the classroom as a teacher, and you know what you talk to your students about in terms of Pokemon and competitive Pokemon and that stuff.
Okay, so this is like my fourth or fifth week of teaching. I think it's like fourth full week, fifth week overall.
So this is like very new.
Yeah, this is like super new. They hired me like a little bit after school had started because the previous teacher had to go away, basically moved away. And you know, a couple of questions always pop up here and there. I still get the random like not related to the topic at hand question of what's your favorite Pokemon, you know. And of course I always answer Shedinja, because, you know, that's my favorite. And then sometimes they have a follow-up, like, what's your favorite animal? And then I answer the cicada.
Ah, yeah. I mean,
that's a no-brainer, right? anyway, they're usually pretty disgusted at the idea of a cicada anyway. So I'm kind of a weirdo in that sense. But yeah, they kind of know about my Pokemon, like, hobby. Mostly because every day since, like, the second full week or so, I started to say, well, I might lose my keys if I keep them loose. So I got to put them on a lanyard. And guess how many lanyards you get from going to Pokemon events?
Oh, boy.
A lot.
A lot. So I'm kind of like, it's like my teacher quirk. You know how they always have that fashion quirk? Like socks, ties, or like shirts, stuff like that. Mine is the lanyard.
Okay.
So I will be changing my lanyard, basically.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Every couple of days to keep it fresh.
Yes.
Yeah. It's always a Pokemon-related one, usually, so.
That's so awesome, actually.
That is cool. I thought you were making a Klefki reference somewhere in there. But no, never mind. Not really. Never mind.
Maybe I should get a Klefki little keychain to put on my lanyard, though. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be cool.
Aside from that, though, I think some kids know that I play competitively the video game. It's really not that popular in terms of, obviously, video games, I think. I think most of the kids there are, like, open to the idea of continuing to play Pokemon, but many of them have just simply, like, outgrown it, I guess. It just wasn't, like, for them to continue playing as they got older.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are definitely a couple of diehard fans, though, I see in my classes here and there. Like, I carry around this, like, Darkrai binder to keep my homework checks. That's, like, from 2014 Nets, so that's a throwback. I just kind of reminded myself of that.
I
use that to keep my homework checks in it.
Now, I went through this phase growing up where I temporarily abandoned Pokemon. And I know, I actually don't see that a lot in the VGC community. I get, like, I think it's like 50-50. So I wanted to ask both of you, did you guys have a phase where you moved away from Pokemon?
I did not.
Steven was true-hearted.
True-hearted.
Yeah. I did not. Like, from the just general gameplay, never did. So I played through every game since Red and Blue. You know, all every generation, never put it away, so.
Yep.
Well, at least that makes one of us around here. I definitely had a fallout stage of Pokemon, which may sound surprising based on how I play the game anyway. But, during, like, Gen 3 days, like Ruby Sapphire, there was just a time where I was, like, super not Pokemon.
Mine was Diamond and Pearl.
Yeah, but I mean, it got rekindled kind of when I went to Taiwan and my uncle got me this like kind of bootleg cart that had a bunch of ROMs on it, and Emerald was on there, and it was like way before Emerald came out in the States, I think. So I kind of just played that, and I was like, wow, this game's really good. Why did I stop playing? And then I got back into it. So,
wait, John, I feel like I have an
Emerald to thank about that.
I have an anti-story to that, and I feel
anti-story?
Like, I think...
What's your story?
I got what were they called back in the day? I think it was a...
Flash card,
Game Shark, something like that for Diamond and Pearl.
Oh, okay.
And I just hacked so much of my game that I just kind of got disinterested. I was like, well, I've done everything. I have all the Pokemon. I have everything.
No,
like,
man.
There's nothing left.
So you got no one to blame for your fallout but yourself, dog.
I think that was part of it. Honestly, it was also just like a coming of age, like, Pokemon's not cool anymore. I'm going to play other cool things. I don't even know what I did instead. But it was only like a year or so, and then I picked up Soul Silver, and I put like 200 hours in so fast. Like, I don't even remember how often I played that game.
That was a fun game because the Pokemon would follow you around all the time.
It was the best. It was
that, by the way.
And 16 gyms. I think that was another huge factor for me was 16 gyms and battling rats
and gym leader rematches.
Yes, I like at one point even young me was like kind of like not 100%ing it, but like I looked up how to get all of them and like what time so that I could just have them all in the same place, and I was like, oh, this is so cool, like I've collected all the gym leaders here and I could face them at any time.
Yeah, that's nice. It's one of the neat things about VGC is that you don't have to be necessarily a fan of the game itself, you know, just the general game. You can just be a fan of the competitive side, which I know some people are in our community, and that's fine. You know, you do you, and you can have all the other people who absolutely love Pokemon on the general gameplay as well as the competitive side, and we can all just mix and mesh together and play in these tournaments and have a good time. So that's something I think that's really cool about this game.
Yeah, kind of to tie it back to where we started with this talk was that, from my students anyway, they don't seem to be that competitively minded about Pokemon. They're kind of surprised it even exists in the first place, at least some of them. But I did hear during class one day someone talking about EVs and IVs, you know what I'm saying? So that's always the first step to becoming a competitive player, learning about the EVs and the IVs, the basics of the basics, you know? So perhaps he has a potential prospect. I'm not going to try recruiting him or anything because that's not really my job as the teacher here. But I did have a couple of people talk about, hey, you should make a Pokemon club, Mr. Who. And I was like, well, that might be an idea. Unfortunately, this year, I don't think that's going to happen since I'm already signed up to sponsor other clubs. So that's probably not going to happen. But I did meet someone today who was like kind of a card player rather than a game player. So, you know, it kind of takes like a lot of people, a lot of different types of people gathering together. So you get a lot of different like people with their preferences. But a card game, you know, kind of express the same issues I have with it, which is that it's kind of expensive to keep up and, get into. But he was like, yeah, I enjoy playing the card game. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty much where I stand. But I can't really afford to have it as a serious endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, so at least there are people interested in the Play Pokemon program. And you probably need enough students to approach you, you know, hey, we'll have enough people for the club, and then it'd be worth it for you. But yeah, that's really neat to hear that, you know, there's still, you know, little murmurings every now and then from the students about the competitive side. But Alex, I wanted to hear what your story is, if you've got one.
I have a little one. It was recent somewhat. I have a full-time job now that I've probably mentioned here a couple of times, but I didn't just like go around parading that I'm a VGC player to everybody that I work with. And so, the people that I interact with more found out. And yeah, so then one day, somebody who I've worked with a bit says to me, now wait, Alex, you play competitive Pokemon? And I was like, yeah. Like, did, you know, X or other person tell you about this? And then they were like, no, actually, I was watching a YouTube video, and I saw you playing against that guy, Wolf. And
oh, whoa.
I was like, oh, no, that's a bad video. You shouldn't watch that one. Yeah, so he was like, I was watching this video, and I was like, wait a minute. That's the guy I work with, like, in this video here. And, like, he has the same name, and that's him. And, yeah, apparently he had borrowed Oras from his, like, girlfriend or something like that and was playing it. And just, like, looking up stuff while he was playing it. And I don't know how, but he somehow came across the video of me playing against Wolf at Worlds. I mean, it does have a lot of views. But, yeah, then he just mentioned that he had coincidentally found me. And then I just basically asked, like, what was the whole thing? Like, you know, how did I get there? Like, did I, like, have to win a bunch to get there? How did I earn my, like, way to Worlds and such? And was this, like, a championship match or something? Exactly. Like, those kind of questions. But yeah, he was just like really, really cool and fun because it was just out of the blue. And yeah, he just like, it's really cool because he knew me and like he and I had talked a little bit before, but I never had mentioned VGC. And then he like found me again, like just online, just like, wait, that's him. What? How? I have to tell him about this.
Yeah, that's a really neat story. Like, it kind of makes sense because that match is probably like posted on Pokemon's official YouTube channel. Like,
I could just look it up really quick. It doesn't take long, and I've looked it up a lot.
I want to say it's there, maybe, from the World Championships 2017 in Anaheim. But yeah, Alex, while you're doing that, double checking on that, I just want to mention my story really quickly. Is that after this past NAIC in 2019, it was maybe like probably 2 or 3 days right after, I was at work, and you know, I work at a museum, so I'm out with the public a lot, you know, guests, right, at the museum. So I'm just at a podium at some point, and then this family walks by. So there's the mother, the father, and then their two sons, and then they ask me, weren't you playing the video game at in Columbus a few days ago? And I was like, yeah, that's me. I was there. It's like, yeah, we saw you on stream. And it was crazy because, you know, I didn't expect anyone to recognize me from that. So that's kind of neat. I remember I talked to the two sons who are playing, and I think they're both in Masters, I want to say. I cannot remember their names for the life of me, but it was really cool just getting to talk to them, you know, hear about their experiences playing there as well. So, always fun thing to happen.
Kind of like a reverse version of that, like an anti-story, like Alex put it, is that my kids asked about, like, do you go to tournaments to play, which, of course, I do. And then I said, yeah, I do. And they were like, what's the highest placement you've ever got? Well, of course, I have to go back to top four 2014 Nats. And then they all get super wide eyes, and they're like, are you serious? That means you're like a Pokemon pro, right? And I was like, uh-huh. No, I mean, no, but yeah, I guess. And so one class I decided to show them because we had a lot of extra time, basically, the set.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, man, go John.
I remember that set pretty clearly, but man, is it boring to watch if you don't know what's going on. There is nothing there to watch. And so, pretty quickly anyway, getting into it, I lost their interest, you know, as teenagers do. So, I teach a bunch of seniors, if it wasn't said before, but yeah, bunch of seniors, so they're just ready to get out and go to college. Not really focused too much about the doldrums of math in a high school downtown, so...
Yes.
Yeah, that was basically my anti-story, where I showed them a video of me playing in 2014, and it's one of the most boring videos you'll ever see on YouTube, to be honest.
Darn, I was imagining, like, much younger kids, and, like, I was gonna say, before you finish the story, like, when you tell them that you get top four at Nationals, that's, like, their equivalent of saying, like, oh, wow, like, you get this far in, like, the Pokemon League, or, like, when Ash enters, like, those tournaments that he does in the anime, you know, like... You got top four at that. That's so incredible. But like, they don't realize how often these tournaments are, and like, not to like demean your accomplishment, because no, obviously, no, that's fine. Yeah. But like, you know, they just, well, as far as they're concerned, like, you might just be like the fourth best person at Pokemon in the world. You know, they don't understand the stake of the tournament.
They maybe don't understand that, and maybe it's like compared to something else. Like whether they try to normalize it through their experiences is that if they participate in some sport or something, like maybe cheer is like the one that comes to mind. They have like a Nationals every year, and getting top four at cheer Nationals is like a really big deal, since everyone in the country comes to it. It's kind of a big thing. It's held in Indianapolis too, by the way, if you're wondering.
Okay, gotcha. Huh.
just a little flex there. but yeah, so they might be comparing it to something along those lines if they're like in that kind of, you know, bubble. And so top four Nats sounds a lot more impressive from that standpoint than from like mine or your standpoints, since we're more in tune with the community and the events that happen in it.
And I actually got recognized for the podcast once, Steven.
You did? How?
Yeah, so I was, you know, just like at the...
Was this at a tournament?
Not at the tournament.
Because that doesn't count.
Not at a tournament. So I was, you know, just at a movie theater, and somebody was like, you look like the guy that's on that one podcast, The Hyper Voice. And I was like, wait.
You look like?
Look like? Alex, this is a made-up story.
I don't even know what you look like from the podcast.
Yeah.
Nothing checks out here.
They use their olfactory senses to sniff out a look for that voice.
You smell like that guy on The Hyper Voice. Now,
finding people out from other places, the kids have not yet found my Twitter or my tag, and let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah, that's a relief. Definitely try to keep that under wraps for a bit.
But what if they listen to the show?
But Alex, you did actually meet somebody from at a movie theater?
No, the whole story was fake.
Oh, God, never mind. God, I thought you were serious. Anyway.
It's some of that Alex dry humor.
Did you not hear how much I struggled to think of a location? I was like, the mall? No, the mall's bad. I was going to say a golf course, but I was like, I don't go to golf courses.
We know
I don't think you go
that.
To movies either.
You should have said a Frisbee golf course.
Yes, a disc golf course. Okay, oh, John, I took
that
you disc
golfing. That would have worked. That would have probably sold it. for like modern day things. But I think that'll cover that. Really quick, we just want to plug our upcoming events. You know, kind of a lot of big majors happening this upcoming weekend. We have our first regional in North America, Atlantic City, New Jersey, happening. We have another regional in Europe in Köln, Germany. And we also have a special event in Campinas, Brazil. So there's a lot of Pokemon. Big major action happening this weekend. And hopefully we'll get to talk about it sometime soon. Yeah, I think that'll do it for our show here. What do you think, everybody?
I think it was awful. We could have done better.
On the other side of the spectrum, I think it was awesome. And oh. I think we could have done worse.
How's are that? You just,
I don't, okay.
Are you just having an anti-opinion?
Yes.
I'm not sure what's going on here, but to all our listeners out there, you can send us feedback, comments, and questions.
Please,
to our
I need
email,
the validation.
VGCHypervoice@gmail.com. You can also find the show on Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Remember, you can leave us a review on iTunes to help with visibility. It helps with others to discover the show. And if you have friends who you think might enjoy a show like this about competitive Pokemon, please tell them about us. And you can also find our show on Facebook and on Twitter at The Hypervoice. Lastly, we'd also like to thank John Hu so much for coming on our show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great to be in here. I mean, I'm still getting used to teaching, so recently I've been a little sleep deprived. But you caught me on a good day, because today's my birthday, so I had a pretty good time at school, as I would say.
And happy birthday to John, who didn't tell happy me it was his birthday. Oh, the worst.
Ooh, I think Gina knows my birthday, isn't that right?
Huh, she probably would.
Well, happy birthday, John, from us right now. And, you know, happy birthday from all the listeners to you in the which would be in the past when they're listening.
Oh, I guess
to this,
that but... I guess that dates this video. Although I haven't said the date, so you know what? Never mind. I'm not gonna say the date.
John's birthday is whenever this podcast comes out.
Yeah, so you'll never know because this probably doesn't come out the day we record it.
Ha ha ha.
Ha ha, you'll never know.
Anyway, happy birthday to John. Thanks so much for being on our show. We really appreciate your time. It means a lot. And you can find the three of us on Twitter personally as well. You can follow me at Super Morioka. Alex, where can people find you?
You can follow me at LexiconVGC.
And John, where can people find you?
Finally, I'm at JhuFSELF. And it is locked because I teach. So if you want to follow, I can approve you. But if you're one of my students, you're not getting in.
Nope.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, very understandable. Well, to all the listeners out there, thank you so much for listening to our show. We really appreciate it. And we hope you stay tuned for more of the Hypervoice.
Alola.
Alola.